A member of the Internet Governance Forum Multi-Stakeholder Advisory Group, I think that's the correct name. And we're here today to talk about three things under the overarching heading of Internet Governance. One of them is a brief explanation of what's happening at the coming IGF. And we're going to talk about enhanced cooperation. And we're going to talk about the WCIT, which is coming up in December. So I have a distinguished group of people to take the strain of all of this, and all I have to do is stand here and take questions. We want this to be interactive. At the end of each one of the sessions, the sections will open up the floor for questions, for comments. Please feel free to come to the microphone. Just before we start with a brief overview of the IGF, I'm just going to ask everyone to briefly just say who they are, and I'll start with you, Eric.
My name is Eric Loeb, and I'm with AT&T as the Vice President of International External Affairs and also with the International Chamber of Commerce, where I chair the Task Force on Internet and Telecommunications.
Hello, I'm Marcus Kummer, the Internet Society.
Kathy Hanley, I'm the Executive Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for ERIN. Two microphones.
You're Teresa Swinehart.
Yes, I'm Teresa Swinehart, Executive Director for Global Internet Policy with Verizon Communications. Also serve on the MAG and full disclosure, also on the ISOC board. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Chengatai Masango. I'm with the IGF Secretariat.
I'm Bill Drake. I'm from the University of Zurich, and I'm also on the GNSO Council. The board of Uralo in at large and the MAG in IGF.
I'm Luis Magalhães. I am the GREC representative for Portugal and also the Portuguese delegate to the Commission on Science Technology for Development of the United Nations.
My name is Tijani Benjamin. I am vice chair of AFRALO and member of ALAC.
Thank you very much. So we're going to start with Chengatai, who's going to give us a brief overview of what's happening in the coming IGF. Chengatai.
Thank you very much, Chris. Just a brief rundown of where the arrangements are concerning the IGF meeting in Baku. So as you all know, this year's IGF meeting is going to be in Baku, Azerbaijan, from 6th to 9th November. There's going to be a ministerial on the 5th of November, the day before. During the February multi-stakeholder advisory group meeting, the main theme of the meeting was decided upon, and it was internet governance for sustainable human, economic, and social development. They also agreed to organize the meeting around the six main sub-themes that were done last year, and these six main themes are internet governance for development, emerging issues, managing critical internet resources, security, openness, and privacy, access and diversity, and the final one being taking stock and the way forward. We had 128 workshop proposals, which were received, and they were evaluated by the Multi-Stakeholder Advisory Group, MAG, and they made comments for their improvements, and the Secretariat sent these comments out to the workshop proponents. So now for the deadlines. The deadline of 30th June was given for these improvements, so which is coming up. And the deadline of 31st of July was given for the workshop proponents to confirm the speakers, develop the workshop agenda, register panelists in the panelist registration form. They have to upload their biographies and a picture as well of the panelists by the 31st of July. We do intend to produce a booklet of the panelists. Now, the other deadlines concerning the meeting is that for 30th June, there's the deadline for the open forums, and the deadline for dynamic coalitions has passed. The IGF registration for IGF village booths is 30th of July. Registration to book a room for bilateral meetings during the IGF, as we say, the IGF is not just about workshop, it's about meeting, and the value is at the edges. So the deadline for this is 30th July, or until space is filled up. The deadline for registration for pre-events, if people want to hold pre-events, that is the day before the IGF. Can you please contact the secretariat before the 30th July? And if there are anybody with special needs, we ask if they would please inform the secretariat as well by 3rd of July so we can make arrangements for them. At the IGF, we also plan to hold an interregional dialogue session, and somebody from the secretariat will be contacting all the regional IGFs to organize this session. We do plan to start registration on the 30th July, so online registration is going to be on the 3rd of July, and on-site registration is going to open 3 days before the event. For those of you who cannot come to the IGF meeting physically, we do have our remote participation initiatives, which are much like ICANNs, and we also do have remote hubs, and we encourage people to register for remote hubs. You can find all this information on the IGF website. And we do offer training on our Cisco WebEx platform for those people who are dealing with remote hubs and who also, if you cannot come there and you want to be a panelist, you can also be a remote panelist. Other news for the IGF, we are revamping our website, and we do encourage the whole community to please come and comment. What changes do you want to see on our website? Just go visit our website, and there's a bulletin board there where you can write down your comments, and we do encourage all of you to please do that. Thank you very much. I'll take questions if there's any questions concerning the
arrangements. Are there any questions about Chengetai's deadlines? Or about getting to Azerbaijan, or
Thank you, Chengetai, for this exhaustive report. As you know, for people who are from developing countries, it's not easy to go to Baku because of financial constraints. So the remote participation is of a great importance for them. I know that the network there, they have a very good broadband, and but we need to test it before the event, so that if there is any problem, any issue, we have to solve it before the forum. Thank you.
Chengetai?
Yes, we've taken that into consideration, and we are going to test it. Baku did hold the Eurovision contest, which was heavily reliant on internet as well, and they did a remarkable job on that, and they're going to take that experience and put it to the IGF arrangements as well. But we are testing, and we do have low bandwidth as well. If people in developing countries do not have a high bandwidth connection, they can still follow using the text stream, the live transcribing.
Yep, that's true. Eurovision Song Contest and the IGF. From the ridiculous to the sublime. Any other questions for Chengetai? Okay, so we're going to move on to enhanced cooperation. Teresa, you're going to take the lead on that and start the ball rolling.
Right. So I'll take a step back first. Out of the World Summit on Information Society process came what was referred to as the Tunis Agenda. And as many will recall, there were two elements that were in that document, aside from a copious amount of principles that are quite useful for all of us to reread occasionally. One was the Internet Governance Forum, which Chengetai described, and we're now moving into our sixth year of that forum, and I think it's been quite successful, including the national and regional IGFs. The other line that came out of the Tunis Agenda was something referred to as enhanced cooperation. Different governments and different stakeholders interpret enhanced cooperation to mean different things. And this has been a fundamental dialogue that's been occurring since 2005. Some view it as a governmental control UN mechanism, as a form of cooperation. Others view it as actual improved cooperation and collaboration. With that historical overview, though, the There's been several consultations that have occurred since 2005. One was the UN Secretary General received input from different organizations describing what they're actually doing around cooperation. I know that OECD, ICANN, ISOC, other organizations provided input into that process. There was a few years later, UN Undersecretary Shaw led another consultation in December 2010. And this was followed most recently in May by a consultation led by the Committee on Science, Technology, and Development this past May. And that consultation was a several-hour or one-day workshop, whichever way you want to look at it, which had the opportunity of government and stakeholder input on what they see around enhanced cooperation, what the dialogues are going, and then was eventually to evolve into potentially a resolution from the CSTD on how to move forward. But there was a range of views that were expressed during these consultations, and there are several themes that arose. Essentially, it's not clear what different parties mean around enhanced cooperation. There's different interpretations, and that before we try to go forward and define a locked-in process of what it actually is defined as, we actually need to do an assessment and a mapping. We need to understand what the real issues are. What are the real issues that governments are concerned about? What are the real issues that governments that have a view of a different kind of model around internet governance mean? What are the problem areas and where is cooperation needed or improved? And how does one solve that? What's actually occurring? What are the evolutions? What are the gaps and the challenges? And from that standpoint, what would be the next steps in the international arena? But what really came out of the dialogue is that there's already quite a few areas of enhanced cooperation or collaboration that exist. And let me just touch on these. And what's really striking is that it's an evolution. As the information society has evolved, different forms of cooperation have evolved. For example, the Organization on Economic Cooperation and Development, so OECD, after their ministerial meeting and the engagement of the technical community, recognized the formation of ITAC, along with the business community and the civil society community as part of their operational structure in leading into policy development processes within the OECD. UNESCO, following a workshop in 2006, hosted at the first IGF, in coordination with the Egyptian government at the time, ICANN, UNESCO, and the ITU, was followed by another workshop, which eventually led to a MOU between UNESCO and ICANN around improving multilingual content globally in light of the introduction of IDNs. The Council of Europe itself has given a range of projects, including internet governance principles, and their work involves all stakeholders. If one goes to this organization, to ICANN itself, the affirmation of commitments is an absolute demonstration of forms of improved cooperation and collaboration on the global level in light of public interest. It is one of the only documents and organizations that has built into it a multi-stakeholder review process on a global level. This is unprecedented and an excellent model to look at for other organizations. If one looks at the evolution of the formation of the CCNSO and the engagement of the CCTLD community from the inception of ICANN, today the CCNSO houses over 130 CCTLDs. That's remarkable. That's another form of cooperation and collaboration. The evolution of the IDN CCTLDs was a process that involved governments, the technical community, civil society, CCTLD managers, and was a dialogue over a several-year process which resulted in the introduction of what is now over 30 IDN CCTLDs. The Governmental Advisory Committee itself, another example. The regional internet registries themselves formed during the WISIS process, and we learned this morning the 10-year anniversary of LACNIC. We also have partnership MOUs, including ICANN's own MOU with UNESCO, a range of other organizations. There's other organizations such as the Pacific Island Telecommunications Association, a small entity in the Pacific, that itself has partnership MOUs with the Commonwealth Telecommunications Organization, the ITU, Asia-Pacific Telecommunity, or something as arcane as the, not arcane, with undue respect, the Secretariat of Pacific Community Applied Geoscience and Technology Division. And the reason I highlight this is it shows the kinds of cooperations and partnerships that exist among different entities involved in the ICT space that are important.
I'll see what I can do.
The Internet Governance Forum, bringing it back to that, is also a catalyst for dialogue. We have in 2011 17 national IGFs and 11 regional IGFs. We have yet to conclude the counting for 2012. So in conclusion on enhanced cooperation, it's a very specialized topic. It's one where there's not agreement, and there's the importance of continued conversation, but we've seen a lot of developments in this process since the Tunis Agenda was concluded, and it's time that we look at how to continue this dialogue in the most constructive way forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Luis is going to speak a bit about enhanced cooperation, and then we'll take some questions. And Marcus had something to say as well. But everyone's going to speak about enhanced cooperation. A demonstration, if ever there was one.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm very happy that Theresa Swinehart made this introduction based on concrete references to a few cases of very specific frameworks. We know that it has been proposed by several states to move enhanced cooperation on internet governance to a strictly intergovernmental, non-multi-stakeholder body within the United Nations. And this is irrespective of the fact that one of the Tunis Agenda outcomes expressly calls for a multi-stakeholder involvement in this sort of process. This kind of position actually is very present even nowadays, because in the meeting we had of the Commission on Science and Technology for Development at the United Nations, precisely on writing on a report on the development of the WSIS process, again, the same position was very much defended by a few of the member states present in such a way that it was not possible to take consensus on any sort of progress regarding this idea. We also sometimes hear about proposals to create a working group to define what enhanced cooperation is and how it should be tackled before handling it and you are starting to handle it anyway. It is true that enhanced cooperation and also critically internet infrastructure resources have been regularly discussed at Internet Governance Forum meetings, but one can claim that the records or outcomes of those meetings are not sufficiently organized to claim progress on this sort of discussion. And one can also claim that people are shying away to actually discuss in an open fashion the difficult issues on these matters. It happens that in the full range of positions that these member states have expressed regarding enhanced cooperation, there are some that think that enhanced cooperation is strictly how to make ICANN become an intergovernmental organization instead of having its present multi-stakeholder, very open environment. So in this setting, what I think would be important and what I'd like actually to trigger some conversation about is that we should enter a completely different regime and actually discuss these issues at face value, and that requires identifying concrete examples of the all processes that have to do with internet governance and can or have enhanced cooperation mechanisms, mapping them and actually measuring progress against that background. This is passing to an evidence-based sort of approach of discussing enhanced cooperation instead of discussing it just politically, as it has been called. So I believe this meeting we have here can be a very good situation where this sort of perspective can be handled, and this could be pursued later on. In fact, what I think we should do is centered on three things. One is to use all relevant multi-stakeholder settings to discuss enhanced cooperation from now on an evidence-based approach. and with particular emphasis with the Internet Governance Forum, but not only those. The second one is to ask relevant stakeholder organizations to map instances of enhanced cooperation and possible gaps, and also Internet governance processes that might still require the beginning of enhanced cooperation, including, of course, the discussion that is on regarding ICANN, which I think should be confronted and discussed openly. And third, to establish systematic ways of recording the contributions and the debates on these multi-stakeholder settings so that they can feed further discussions on enhanced cooperation, inclusively on United Nations instances where sometimes these contributions are ignored. We know that in multi-stakeholder processes it is very difficult to arrive at good synthesis of the procedures of the debates. But it is fairly easy to establish a quite rigorous and systematic way of taking good account of inputs, of formal written inputs to the debate, and of the inputs in the debate during the discussions themselves. So somehow what I think also could help a lot is to set up this sort of processes, because these would lead to a situation that probably would be much better grounds to discuss this issue, as if it were an abstract threat to certain regions of the world. And as a matter of fact, it's very concrete and can be handled in very concrete fashion. Thank you.
Thank you, Luis. Marcus?
Thank you. A few comments and then a commercial. The comments first. There are many VISIS veterans in the room, but for those who are not VISIS veterans, it may be worthwhile recalling that the World Summit on the Information Society actually gave the Internet institutions very good marks. It did recognize that the Internet works well. There was a slight but in the approved text. There is room for improvement, and one of these buts is enhanced cooperation. Now, the language agreed on was carefully crafted. It was a diplomatic compromise, and it allowed everybody to claim victory after the event. And that's basically the problem we're facing. There's no shared understanding of what we mean with enhanced cooperation. And both Teresa and Luis have explained this very well and also looked at ways forward. The Internet Society was asked to be on the panel at these consultations in May at the CSTD, and I made it clear that for us it is enhancing cooperation within organizations but also between organizations, and there's clearly no need for setting up any new type of organization or process. And in simple terms, to me at least, it means, what does it mean, enhanced cooperation? I would say the application of the WISIS principles with regard to internet governance. And the WISIS principles are open, transparent, and inclusive, and the involvement of all stakeholders. Now, if we look at what happens in this field, then we can maybe see whether enhanced cooperation has taken place or whether there are gaps. And I'm grateful for these suggestions just Luis put forward, and also for Teresa actually pointing out that really much has happened in the years since WISIS. There is clear sense of progress. Now, the commercial. As this debate will not go away, there will be other deadlines across the horizon. Next year we have the World Telecom Policy Forum. Then there will be the plenipotentiary in the ITU. Then there will be WISIS plus 10. So there will be a continued pressure. And we thought it would be good to take this dialogue forward a bit. And we, that is the Internet Society, partnered with the Association for Progressive Communication and with ICC BASIS. So we have a true multi-stakeholder organizing committee to organize a pre-event at the Baku IGF. There will be a one-day event on enhanced cooperation. And we have also reached out to former host governments of the Internet Governance Forum, those from developing countries, and I'm happy to say that Brazil, Egypt, and Kenya are on board to work with us to organize this event, and we will call for contributions. It will be a very open process. Everybody will be welcome to submit the contribution. We will create a special website for this event. I think APC is already in the process of doing so. And I think one of the key questions is, what are the questions that need to be addressed, whether enhanced cooperation has taken place or is taking place, or in order to find out the gaps. So that was the commercial, and I hope to see many of you involved in this process. Thank you.
I'm going to, in a second, just want to ask a question. So just that I'm clear, what's the goal? Is there some big exam that comes up at WSIS Plus 10 when enhanced cooperation is stood up on stage and given marks to see whether it's worked or not? I mean,
there will be a preparatory process for WSIS Plus 10. There will be questions asked, has anything happened? Also, have you taken it seriously? And I think one very basic objective is basically to engage, to encourage a dialogue on this. There was, as both speakers said, there were proposals on the table to create a working group to come up with something on enhanced cooperation. We thought it would be premature to jump to the conclusion that we do need a working group, but we are ready to engage in a dialogue. At the meeting of the Commission on Science and Technology for Development, we were actually fairly close to reaching agreement on launching a process, a kind of mapping exercise, and leaving it open whether or not at the end of this exercise there would be need for setting up a working group, while not excluding it, but we thought it would be would make more sense before to find out actually what are we talking about. Then a few countries completely blocked that. They said they would like a working group, but not a multi-stakeholder government-only working group, and that led to the breakdown. But we thought by having this pre-event, we would show as internet community, as business community, and some civil society organizations that we are interested in having this dialogue, and I think the mapping exercise can also be very useful. And frankly, we don't have to blush. A lot has happened, and I think we maybe can also be a little bit more aggressive
yeah.
And ask what have others done in order to implement, to apply the WSIS principles.
Thanks, Marcus.
Merci, Chris. First of all, since there is interpretation, let's make use of it for diversity. So I will speak French. Please put your head.
Well, so I'm going to be very clear so everybody understand me. You remember that in November 2005, the governments and head of states had recognized in the article, in this article 69 to 71, the need to reinforce cooperation to allow governments to work in the same way and apply their role and responsibilities regarding the public policies of internet. This cooperation had to include the elaboration of principles applying to the world for public policies and coordination, this is very important, the coordination and management of critical resources of internet. The agenda also says that the United Nations Secretary has to begin a process to reinforce cooperation before the end of the first quarter of 2006 working with all stakeholders. So this is for information. It is very important to know what was decided. Afterward, the agenda speaks about the Article 72-78, the IGF, in all details, including the creation, convocation, mission, and deliverable, etc. So, cooperation, enhanced cooperation, and forum on internet governance are two different things, as it appears in Tunis' agenda. Furthermore, those who were there in Tunis in 2005 remember that the article on enhanced cooperation was a way to calm the feeling of different governments regarding internet control for only one country and to convince them of the interest of a forum on internet governance without any resolution and recommendation. So it was, the idea was an equilibrium. This question of cooperation was aimed to for everybody to accept the agenda. The forum is maybe this forum on government, on governance, internet governance, is not what governments who didn't agree was expecting, because the Tunis agenda was so lack of precisions that those who accepted didn't want to accept it totally. I'm not finished.
The position of the civil society.
I apologize.
Okay.
Sorry, my fault.
Pour la société civile.
For the civil society, we come from different places, so we have different kind of position, and enhanced cooperation doesn't disturb, but the summit on information shows that we can come to a consensus. Civil society doesn't want a controlled internet by an intergovernmental structure and wants a multi-stakeholder governance. Some are concerned about the control by only one nation of internet, and discussions on governance of internet are still taking place. Another issue on which we agree is the constitution of a working group, multi-stakeholder, to reach a consensus, a precise consensus, on what we are expecting of this enhanced cooperation. Thank you very much.
So, if there are any, I'm going to go to Bill in a second, but if people want to ask any questions or make any comments on the enhanced cooperation, because we're coming to the close of the discussion on that and going to move on to the WCIT relatively soon. So please form an orderly queue. Bill.
I simply wanted to point out that, as we all know, civil society is very diverse in its views globally, and that the various coalitions that work on these kinds of issues have variety of perspectives. I'm not sure I would characterize it as a situation where everyone thinks that the internet is controlled by one country, and I'm not sure that there's broad consensus in civil society that we want a working group to do what was suggested. There have been riotous debates on these points for a long time, and I can't identify any consensus in any of the relevant coalitions on those points that I would. So I simply wanted to add that to Tijani's characterization.
Thank you. That just goes to show. I mean, enhanced cooperation doesn't mean agreeing with each other, right? It just means talking to each other. Go ahead.
Bill Smith with PayPal. Just like to comment that significant resources are being spent on enhanced cooperation, certainly from the internet community. I personally participate. Many of the people up on the panel do, and a number of people in the audience and elsewhere. Issues have been raised by ITU member states have been repeatedly addressed, most recently with the IPv4 discussions. That was a multi-year effort. where questions came in the form of or came from member states with specific liaison to a variety of internet organizations who responded repeatedly. I personally attended some of those meetings, and the questions just would be asked again and again and again, where we were told the answers were not acceptable. Where answers were things like, you know, what is the technical answer to this? How does this work? I find that very frustrating as a member of the internet community and one who knows how these things work, and to see time and resource wasted on such an effort. Going forward, we have WITSA, the Wicket Preparation, the Wicket Congress itself, and including any resulting regulation. And these all will require additional significant resources. Some of these resources, if regulation comes in the Wicket, will actually go out for decades, if not a century. So I submit our time will be better spent improving the internet governance institutions that we currently have rather than attempting to replace them. And I stress plural. ICANN is not the only one. There are others. The internet governance of the current internet governance works. It is not perfect, but it works. I agree with the evidence-based approach that was suggested here. I would ask that we have verifiable evidence of issues with the current model, processes, results, et cetera, not mere speculation that there is a problem. Given that, we could establish a dialogue to address those issues rather than start with a solution to a problem that many of us believe does not exist. As evidence, I suggest that we look at the internet today. In excess of 2.5 billion users, it is thriving. It has brought social and economic benefit to many participants in the world. It works. The internet community is ready and willing to participate. We have participated. We will continue to participate. For us, enhanced cooperation means seeing someone on the other side that is willing to participate on a level equal to us, not over us. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone want to comment before Wolfgang takes the microphone? No? Okay. Wolfgang?
Thanks. My name is Wolfgang Kleinwächter. I'm from the University of Aarhus. And I was with Bill, under the leadership of Marcus, member of the Working Group on Internet Governance, which produced more or less the Tunis agenda. Because the language from the final report from the WCAG made its way more or less directly into the Tunis agenda. And insofar, you cannot dislink enhanced cooperation in the IGF from the definition of internet governance. I think the definition is really of great importance, and it was accepted by the heads of state of 180 plus member states of the United Nations. And the definition has not only the element that all stakeholders has to be involved in their respective roles. The second part is even more of importance because it speaks about shared norms, principles, and decision-making procedures. And I think this is really, you know, more or less a wonderful legal basis because it was adopted by the states, you know, for a further development of the multi-stakeholder model. You know, with Bill, I do not see any political will to agree on enhanced cooperation among the 190 member states of the United Nations. So it's not a theoretical question that you have to clear this. You know, there is no political will among the governments to agree. We remember we had two functions in the report, the forum function and the oversight function. And for the oversight, which was the starting point for enhanced cooperation, there were four different models: status quo, status quo minus, status quo plus, status quo plus plus, to have an intergovernmental treaty. No consensus. And we have the same situation today. Nothing has changed. We have the four groups who want to have different things. So what is the way forward? I fully support Marco's approach with a mapping. So, and then, you know, let's remember what Bill Clinton said in San Francisco with regard to ICANN. Internet governance is stumbling forward. As far as it goes forward, you know, it's okay. So I do not see a need, you know, to push for a quick result. Let's move forward step by step, and let's see what the outcome is. But one point is important, and this is a message for ICANN. It's extremely difficult, or it gets more difficult, to defend ICANN and the multi-stakeholder model in an unfriendly environment if The homework is not done by this organization. That means we have to impress others by excellent work and by demonstrating that the multi-stakeholder model works. If this fails, then we will see a very, very negative outcome, and this will deliver munition to the status quo plus plus people who really want to change it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bertrand.
Good afternoon. My name is Bertrand Lachapelle. I'm a member of the ICANN board, but I'm not speaking in that capacity here. I lead a program on internet and jurisdiction at the International Diplomatic Academy. On enhanced cooperation, it's funny because the word that comes to mind is actually not shared agreement, but shared disagreement. It's just an agreement on a formulation that everybody disagrees upon. The second point is, to complement what has been said, the debate about formation or non-formation of a working group on enhanced cooperation is not over. We know that there are the ECOSOC meetings and then the United Nations General Assembly at the end of the year. And one of my fear is that there might be the possibility of an establishment of a working group by the UN General Assembly and by a sheer majority that would be purely intergovernmental. It is extremely important that all governments who believe in the multi-stakeholder model, or at least believe that it is, that those issues need to be addressed in a multi-stakeholder fashion, make sure that whatever discussion takes place in New York ensures that whatever group is formed in a multi-stakeholder manner. Wolfgang mentioned the working group on internet governance. It is essential that any group is multi-stakeholder. Finally, there's the WSIS plus 10 discussion. Nobody knows what the format of the WSIS plus 10 is likely to be. Everybody hopes that it's not going to be a new summit. But what I would like to recall is that every year now, we have at least three meetings, not even mentioning the ICANN meetings and any other preparatory meetings. We have an IGF, we have a WSIS forum in May, and we have a Commission on Science and Technology for Development. I don't see any reason that would prevent making the WSIS plus 10 just a joint meeting of those three things, because otherwise it would be completely a nightmare. And the final element to slightly disagree maybe or make a distinction regarding what Marcus said. The definition of internet governance, without using those exact words, makes a very important distinction between governance of the internet, the infrastructure, and governance on the internet of the usage. I fully agree and support that the ecosystem, the institutional ecosystem for the governance of the infrastructure to which ICANN belongs, works well, shouldn't be the focus. However, we must recognize that as far as the governance of usage, there are no multi-stakeholder institutions and processes. And if we don't think about establishing them, the only alternative will be either intergovernmental treaties or a proliferation of national laws that will be incompatible.
Thank you, Bertrand. Does anybody want to comment on Bertrand's comments? That'll be a no. Martin.
Martin Boyle from Nominets. I actually think there is a really good story to tell about enhanced cooperation. It's just that we're not very good at telling it. And therefore, I really, really do welcome the idea of doing some mapping, of identifying actually what is going on, and presenting and preparing that as evidence. And I'd particularly take up the point that we need to be quite focused in that mapping because, as was identified, enhanced cooperation is all about helping governments get engaged in the process. And that is something where this particular house has got a spectacularly good reputation. You know, it has got lots of governments involved, and the governments are taking a more active role, and I think we do need to make that very clear. What is worrying me about the collection of that evidence is the speed with which we might do it. If we're talking about doing a workshop pre-IGF, I think we're already too late. At the moment, we have got the preparation for the Secretary-General's report that will go to the World Telecom Policy Forum in May. That document will be under discussion between now and February, by which time it will be too late. We need to have common shared language that we can make sure is included in that text. And the other area where I think this information is going to be very useful is what's going on at the moment, making sure that we are feeding that information in a usable form to those people who are doing the negotiations for WICKET in December. Because, again, that is going to require a lot of those decisions to be made by sometime in October. Thank you.
Thanks, Martin.
Zahid. Thank you. Hi, Zahid Jamil. I'm a councillor in the GNSO, a member of the MAG, but I speak on my personal capacity. Forgive me, I will speak without attribution about certain terms that I use for various reasons. I just want to share an anecdote which may help in understanding what kind of lobbying is being done to certain developing countries with respect to what they're thinking of enhanced cooperation is and what it may impact, how it may impact what is about to take place in the coming months. I was at a workshop a few weeks ago. It was a six-day-long workshop, just to give you an idea of the people who were in that. Certain Middle Eastern countries who have recently had major changes in their political dynamics had new folks. Okay, Chris.
Slow down, Zahid.
Certain Middle Eastern countries whose there's been a lot of change in their political dynamics recently were attending there. So they basically was, you know, it was starting from scratch, getting to know about many things, either from, you know, spectrum to internet governance to anything else. And there was another international organization there, which I will not name, with a delegation of three, which was there for 6 days and sat through the entire program, despite the fact that they could have simply just made their presentation and left. So that's the devotion they gave to that. And the sort of things that was said was, with respect to, say, for instance, IPv6, saying it is said by this California-based private organization controlled by the U.S. government Department of Commerce, anything you need to do pointing towards these different individuals who may need a CCTLD redelegation, saying that this is a California-based organization, says that the IPv6 addresses are sufficient, but ha, 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 if you look at the curtains on the right, if every one of them had an IP address, do you really think that would be enough? And then moving quickly to a slide which showed the current allocation of IPv6 addresses, showing Europe as having the majority, the U.S. being second, maybe 30%, and the rest of the countries, especially some Middle East and African countries, having a sliver. So the impression given was that that's the allocation of the entire IPv6 numbers. So the question was asked by, for instance, this Middle Eastern country, why is that the case? Why do we get less? And the answer was, well, that's what's going to happen if you're going to leave this to a California-based organization. I'm going to leave that with that thought. We need greater outreach from people who are involved in ICANN. We need greater outreach from ICANN in itself, not that they don't try hard enough and they try to be everywhere they can, but we need greater. And I think in terms of resource, having ex-board members, having other people who've been involved with ICANN as a resource, as ambassadors going out there, as senior people, speaking to these governments would help. So I'll leave you with that thought. Thank you.
Zahid, could you give us a bit of a clue who that might have been, that organizer?
I can't hear you, Chris. What was it?
Nothing. It's okay. Okay. Don't worry about it. I was just playing. I'm going to close the queue after Pablo, and then we're going to go to WICKET, but Aisha.
Thank you. Aisha Hassan for the International Chamber of Commerce and its BASIS initiative. I just wanted to underscore a few things that have been brought out in this discussion and highlight that being a part of the discussions on enhanced cooperation since the WIGIG myself, we've been stuck in trying to define and agree on a definition. And I think one of the things that helped in May in Geneva was coming to terms, at least many more stakeholders coming to terms with the fact that continued focus on just a definition was not going to actually move things forward on concrete problems and challenges that governments and other stakeholders have identified. So as we're talking about this mapping or assessment exercise, I would look at it also as an opportunity to build common understanding of what are those real concerns. And from a global business perspective, we've been really encouraging that kind of dialogue to really focus on capturing all of the many cooperative efforts that we have seen, but also drilling down into the gaps, which is where people's concerns really are. And we hope that, for instance, this pre-event, but also other events and opportunities between now and November will give an opportunity for those concerns to be highlighted in a concrete manner so that we can all start really talking about how to try to address them. The last point I would just like to make is that I think it's critical for all stakeholders to be raising awareness with their governments about what is at stake in the ECOSOC and UN General Assembly discussions. We are in the business community trying to make sure that communication is raised with capitals, but also please make sure that those that information is translated to New York missions, who may or may not have the same information that Geneva missions or capitals do. Thank you.
Thank you. Marilyn, I hesitate to say this to you of all people. But I did say that I had closed the queue.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. As long as it's short. Pablo.
Hello, my name is Pablo. I work for APNIC, the Regional Internet Registry for Asia Pacific. I don't know what version of this internet governance session it is, but there have been quite a few, and I find this space very useful, informative, and it usually describes well the status of the discussions and the processes, and I think ICANN is a really good space for these informative discussions to happen. In APNIC, we have been following most of these processes, IGF, the Wiki, the ITU, and many others, and mostly with a regional focus. And we have sort of gathered a lot of views from our community, and we always try to find a place where to vert all these views and aggregate them globally. We are a regional organization. We cannot cover the world, but we always want to work with others. I think what Teresa said, there are many very good examples of enhanced cooperations, and there are also a good story to share. As Wolfgang said, I think there are not very different views in this panel. Actually, I see many common views. Or also, as Bertrand said, there are common views on disagreement or concerns. However, I have not seen yet agreements on collective action and organized views, and I think that is the potential where we should head on. Another small observation is that while I can see many organizations gathered in this panel, industry, private sector, governmental, I don't see what's the role of ICANN only to provide this space, or there is also another voice from ICANN in this place. So that's about it, and I would like continue kind of finding that way for a collective action on a global level.
Thanks, Pablo. Marilyn?
Thank you, Chris. My name is Marilyn Cade. I came to the microphone because, like many here, you've heard the panelists say that there are many people in the audience that have been actively engaged in these issues over time. We're beginning to find each other at the ICANN meetings because of forums like this. But I think we've used a couple of phrases that I thought it might be helpful if you haven't wandered this road for a long time. So the business constituency, which I chair, for this meeting has published a newsletter, and we have a roadmap of the meetings that the panelists have been referring to and speakers have been referring to. It's on our website, and we will have a one-page version of it that you'll be able to download and use when you go back and try to explain to your bosses and to your peers why all these meetings in the internet ecosystem are important to ICANN, but also important to the internet. So our website is www.bizconst.org.
Thank you, Marilyn. Do you have a laminated single sheet that you can hand out to people?
Give me till tomorrow.
Okay. We're going to move on to a related topic, which is the WCIT, and we're going to hear from Kathy, and we're going to hear from Eric, and we're going to hear from Bill. And we're going to have comments from you. Kathy.
Thank you, Chris. I've got the opportunity to talk about a function that will be coming up at the end of this year that there's absolutely no agreement on, both by those that are participating in the meeting and those on the fringes of the meeting. So that's just a little disclaimer before we start. For those of you that don't you keep hearing the term WICKET and you're not sure what it stands for, it's World Conference on International Telecommunication Regulations. It's being sponsored by the ITU. It is a full-on treaty that will need to be ratified by various countries that participate in the conference. The wicket that we have today, which I will point out, is roughly a 19-page treaty at a very, very high level. It was agreed to in 1988 at the World Administration Telegraph and Telephone Conference in Melbourne, Australia. Fortunately, I was not around for that, but I'm seeing the outcome of it. It came into force in 1990 after it was ratified by 170 countries. The ITU, I'm going to play it very safe and quote the ITU on some things so that there's no question as to whether or not what's being said is the correct statement. The ITU has summarized the proposed changes to the ITRs under the following headings: human right of access to communications, security in the use of ICTs, protection of critical national resources, international frameworks, charging and accounting, including taxation, interconnection and interoperability, quality of service, and convergence. As you can imagine, it covers everything out there from soup to nuts. It's about mobile usage, it's about taxation on mobile uses, critical internet resources get included in there in the discussions. But we finally had the last preparatory meeting last week. I was in Geneva for a week, and it was the 8th Council Working Group on WICCET. When we started this process roughly 2 years ago, there was a handful of people in the room, 30, 40 people at the most. There was an excess of 200 people at the last meeting. Mostly governments, and I emphasize that because those of you that aren't familiar with the ITU, it is a membership-driven organization that is ruled is a little strong, but it covers it, of member states. The final say is the consensus reached by member states, not by sector members. The member positions really crystallized at this last meeting. And again, I want to emphasize, there is no agreement. I told you earlier that the ITRs today are 19 pages long. After 8 strong, heartfelt meetings and arguing, we were up to a document that, when I checked yesterday, was 279 pages long, with everyone's ideas of what they want, how they want changed. What we had out of 1988 was a very high-level, 10-article document that talked about, you know, ensuring things you'd think I'd remember this, that communications were available. If there was an emergency, you have maritime rules, so that if you're offshore, you don't have agreement with the closest country, that they'll take your call and process everything. We are beyond that now. We are very much down into the weeds of how networks are run, how security works. And again, there is no agreement. There will be 3 scheduled regional meetings yet to take place this year. APT, the Asia-Pacific Group, will meet 6 to 8 August in Bangkok. CETEL, which is the Organization for the Americas, will meet 11 to 14 September in El Salvador. ATU, the African Telecommunications Group, will meet 25 to 26 September, and that'll be in Accra, Ghana. Not yet scheduled, but possibly possibly to be held, will be SEPT sometime in the fall. That's the European organization. The Arab states are talking of having another regional group, and the Regional Commonwealth in the Field of Communications, the RRC, which is Russia in the Stands, is also talking about having a meeting in the fall. Now for the part that everyone's heard about and talked about. This was the, that was just a little background. Documentation. Documentation in the ITU is most normally restricted to members. And depending on whether or not you are a sector member of the telecommunication standardization or the development, you are restricted to documents out of that sector. You can't go across it all. Well, there has been an outstanding effort by folks in this audience through social media and such to get the ITU to release documents. And I'm going to quote Hamadoun Touré, the Secretary General of the ITU. And this came during a speech he gave last week at the meeting while discussing public access to proposals under discussion. Quote, "I would therefore be grateful if you could consider this matter carefully, as I intend to make a recommendation to the forthcoming session of Council regarding open access to these documents and, in particular, future versions of Temporary Document 64. That is the draft proposal for the new ITRs. The ITU Council meeting starts July 4th and will run for 2 weeks. That is the body that has to make the approval in order to release these documents. And I also want you to hear what I'm saying, that he's talking about one document, TD 64.
Temporary document.
Yes.
Not even
yes.
A real document.
Well, it's close. It's just temporary right now. He then went on to make a statement that I'm not sure that there are as many people in the room aware of this as there was the release of documents. Again, I quote, "I would also be grateful if you would consider the opportunity of conducting an open consultation regarding the ITRs. I also intend to make a recommendation to Council in this regard as well." I don't know what that means. I don't know when it would happen, but it's kind of step two. So I encourage everyone that's participated in the social media to bring it out, to, you know, keep it coming, because it's obviously had an effect. Before I finish, I'll just give you the titles in case anyone has nothing to do and wants to go look these documents up. The first one is Council Working Group on WICCET, Temporary Document 62, Revised Version 2. It is the draft compilation of proposals with options for revisions to the ITRs. That is the little baby that's 274 pages long. They're difficult to read at best. Hopefully, if you try and go through them, you need a lot of time, and if you can have a copy of the current ITRs, which are available for free on the website, you'll match them up, and they are proposals from every member state that has been suggested in the last 2 years, bounced against a specific paragraph of the ITRs. The other document, Council Working Group WICCET, Temporary Document 64, Revised Version Number 2, is the anticipated final draft of the ITRs. That's 83 pages, in case you finish the other one first. On that note, there is a possibility of a meeting in October. That will be decided over the next 2 weeks sometime, 1 or 2 days, to continue these discussions. Other than that, the next stop is Dubai, starting 3 December, and hopefully, well, it will end December 14th, because it is a treaty and they have to get it signed before we can close the meeting. And that's it.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm going to ask Eric and then Bill, but I'm going to ask you if you wouldn't mind to make it, you know, sort of 5 minutes at the most each, because I do want to take questions from the audience before we close, and we need to close in time for the next session. Eric.
Okay, I'll share some business community views on some of the either desirable or undesirable potential outcomes at WICKET. And for your reference, for something perhaps more approachable than the entirety of all of the documents that Kathy mentioned, the International Chamber of Commerce did prepare at the beginning of this year a summary of what to anticipate, what the WICKET event considers, some of the primary issues likely to arise, and of course an ICC set of positions on that. And you can locate that on the ICC website. If you find me later, I can also provide you with a copy, but it's a useful document, I believe. What we'll talk about today is largely consistent with the areas mapped out at that time. And as Kathy highlighted, there is a tremendous amount of discussion on the WICKET. And for those active in multilateral activities, it's unusual that 6 months out from a conference, you are seeing articles in Vanity Fair and major newspapers and the like. You know, at a level, I'd say this is a good thing. People are interested. It's a very important process, and it concerns a very important part of our lives and of our economy. So that we are all here, that there is great attention to it, that there is great debate about important issues is a important and a good thing. Amidst the speculation and the rhetoric on potential outcomes, it's also important to step back a little bit to a higher degree of abstraction and to consider some of the first principles of WICKET where perhaps there is some wide agreement, because when you step back far enough to something appropriate for a treaty-level document, then you can find some ground. Some of these, we want global cooperation and global prosperity, reducing the digital divide with developing countries in particular. We want sustainable networks and investment incentives across the ecosystem. We want cross-border flows of information and innovative ideas. We want economic growth and job creation. And we recognize that the ITU is a very important organization to us, all in several critical and enduring ways, such as spectrum policy, standards development, and as a convener of experts from developing and developed countries to share best practices on telecommunications policy. And so for the vast majority of member states at the ITU, there is broad agreement that these are the core pragmatic goals at WICKET. So where's the debate? There are differences of opinion on how to achieve those goals, and therein lies the vigorous exchange of proposals. On the spectrum of proposals, some views lean towards reliance on market mechanisms and ongoing liberalization of the competitive markets, whereas other views lean towards new regulatory intervention to guide market results. So AT&T and the ICC are of the view that to maximize the market mechanisms that have had a really strong track record of results and have private sector leadership within a multi-stakeholder process. We also believe that the ITR needs to remain a treaty that contains high-level policy and strategic themes and not a treaty of detailed regulations and technical matters. In 1988, it was just a handful of pages long, and in 1988, international telecommunications services in most countries were provided by monopoly, government-owned carriers, and services were predominantly voice. Since then, the global telecommunications industry has been transformed in most countries by privatization and market liberalization, huge increases in traffic volume, rapid expansion of new services and technologies, spectacular growth of the internet, and the emergence of non-traditional service providers. Now, we all know and we talk about here that this transformation brings new challenges, and we absolutely agree that further progress and improvements are essential to resolve those challenges. But the model of liberalization is delivering unprecedented benefits compared to rates of progress in the past. So 34 years later, in 2012, it is reasonable to argue that where there is more competition, it's appropriate to modernize the ITRs by minimizing them. It's not a shocking concept, to reduce regulation where competition is achieving consumer benefit. And given the rapid pace of technology and business model change in today's liberalized markets, it's even more important than in 1988 to have an instrument that sets out high-level principles for international cooperation rather than mandating or encouraging detailed new regulations or addressing the technical issues that are just issues of today. Detailed technology-specific points are likely to be inappropriate for an international treaty and could be harmful in their distortion of competitive markets or quickly outdated in this highly dynamic industry. I have another few points that I can make specifically on the internet policy issues. What I'll do is save that for a balance of time to make sure Bill has an opportunity,
we'll come back and address
the specific provisions that are arising in the area of internet policy.
You, fantastic. Bill, you want to have anything to say at all, Bill?
Thank you. What's really important to keep in mind here is that we're talking about the renegotiation of a treaty that goes back to 1865, and that the fundamental principles that guide that treaty really haven't changed in that time. And that's kind of a remarkable thing in and of itself. The treaty is predicated on the notion that you've got sovereign states that are each in control of their mutually exclusive sovereign domains who then engage in a treaty-grounded relationship where their corresponding national administrations will interconnect their networks and figure out a mechanism to share revenue between them so that nobody competes against each other or takes advantage of each other. Everything is done through the cooperation and support of the parties. And, of course, that worked very well in a very kind of regulatory restrictive way for over 100 years. In 1988, the negotiations led to a substantial liberalization of this agreement that opened up markets by expanding the range of special arrangements, which are arrangements outside of that framework that could provide services to other players, specialized value-added services for corporations, computer-based services, and so on. But in the years since, many countries have, their national carriers have lost revenue or have not achieved the revenue gains that they would like, and governments have also, in many cases, felt that their control, their sovereign control, was being eroded by new types of service delivery that might go around their traditional ability to surveil and control their border. And so what you've got then is a process that started 12 years ago. There's been multiple expert groups and council working groups and so on. This is not a new thing. That reflected this dissatisfaction on the part of many parties that the world has changed in ways that have not been good for them, and they want their money back. And they want their money back through a multilateral treaty that will give them greater market shares, greater bargaining power, and in the case of some telecom carriers, regulatory relief from conditions they face in their home markets that limit their revenues in their minds. So what's being proposed? Just very briefly, just to give you some quick ideas. Who is to be covered? The traditional arrangements covered essentially the administrations, the national PTTs, or parallel companies that were recognized, given a special status in other countries with private carriers. And then you had recognized private operating agencies, which were special companies that had particular obligations under the treaty, private sector companies. And then there was these special arrangements for everybody else. What they're proposing now is language that essentially gets rid of the recognized in front of private operating agencies, so that essentially all entities engaged in telecommunications could potentially be subject to the treaty. Now, it gets more complicated when you ask the question, well, what is covered by the treaty? They are consistently building into the text, wherever they can, ICTs. Suddenly the ITU's mandate is telecom and ICT. Didn't used to be. Used to be just public telephony, connecting public switch telephone networks. Suddenly they're in charge of ICT. There are proposals to change the definition of telecommunications to include the word and processing, which means, in effect, any kind of information, computerized processing of signals and so forth, including the internet. There are terms that are really quite mysterious, like internet traffic termination services. This is, I guess, when a YouTube call is terminated. I don't know what it is, but they want to have it in there. They want to add in a whole variety of other areas that have never been subject to a multilateral regulatory treaty. Define and regulate spam, fraud, routing security, make technical standards mandatory, and they must be built into national regulatory policies. Position the ITU as a dispute resolution body. In some proposals, the ITU would become a global internet registry to hand out IPv6 addresses. There are proposals on security that are quite sweeping. My favorite is from China. It says essentially that states have responsibility to supervise enterprises using ICTs in their territory to ensure their effective functioning in secure and trustworthy conditions. They forgot harmony, but I'm sure that's in there too. But the most important part, which really gets to the guts of what all this is about, has been the proposal that just came in from the European Telecommunication Network Operators, the UTNO, which basically calls for, very helpfully, a shift in the ways in which peering and transit are done in the internet, and wants to establish a mechanism for fair revenue sharing so that they can recover their costs. They, in their own language, strike the term administrations and apply these rules to operating agencies. So anybody's an operating agency, okay? And they have to endeavor to ensure that there's sufficient telecommunications facilities and an adequate rate of return on investments. And so everybody has to negotiate commercial agreements based on fair compensation, respecting the principle of sending party pays. Now, this proposal has been taken up, not surprisingly, by the Arab governments, by a number of African governments, by the Russians, and so on. So going into the negotiations, then, we have a situation where the traditional kind of money involved in governing global telecommunications is at stake, but what's also at stake is the possibility of expanding the concept of telecom to include internet and then apply all those frameworks into the internet space. So that's pretty substantial. Now, it is true that governments, and I will conclude, it is true that governments can take reservations. That's a tradition with these agreements. The existing agreement we have right now, if you look in the back of it, there's like long section of reservations where you see like the U.S. government refuses to recognize any interpretation of this document that suggests that so-and-so. Everybody has these huge, long recommendations, and I'm sure if there's a lot of very expansive stuff that there will be reservations from many of the OECD countries and others saying, we do not accept that this language applies to the internet. But there will be other governments who will say, we interpret this as applying to the internet. And so that means they will, in their own operations and in their bilateral relationships with correspondent countries, insist on having negotiations and policy frameworks that reflect what was agreed in the international treaty. And that will mean that you'll get a level of balkanization in different types of issue spaces with highly variable conditions applying across the net. So it is a potential risk, and it's something that people need to pay attention to and engage on. We'll be talking about it more in Baku. I'm running a workshop. There will be a discussion of this in the CIR main session. And hopefully we can get people mobilized around these issues more because it is important. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you very much. No, I am on. Good. Comments? Microphone? Cue? Please? Thank you. Yes. Kieran, as I Hello. Live and breathe, what can I do for you today?
Kieran McCarthy here from .next. So this is great, but it's sort of I'm sort of hearing the same things that I heard 3 months ago. I feel like we were just moaning.
We'll leave the room then.
Well, I was going to, and then I thought, you know what? I'll make a comment and then leave. So, yes, the ETNO thing is no good, but then it's not getting anywhere, and we know that. And there's no support for it, and it's not going to get anywhere. A big chunk of these things are not going to get anywhere. This is the way the ITU works. Anyone can put in any paper, and most of them don't get anywhere. So I think rather than moaning about it, I would, because this is so important, I would like our discussion to be what can we do to make sure nothing dramatically bad happens? What can we do in a pragmatic sense? So you've got a whole room of people here that if you can rile them up and say you should do this or we should do this, then we might actually make a difference. So that would be my, I would urge you to say this is what you can do to make sure we don't end up in a terrible situation.
Thank you very much. Stefano.
Stefano Trumpi, and GAC representative for Italy, but also as chair of the Italian chapter of ISOC, I interpret the opinion of the internet community, let's say, in Italy at least. So, first of all, we are trying to follow this preparation of the Dubai meeting, and concerning whatever has been explained, we are confused because we are talking of ITU claims to be a multi-stakeholder organization, but this is not true de facto because the civil society is not practically represented, and then the companies that are in the industry side are mostly telcos that have to protect their role. And I like to say that the internet has been a miracle because it escaped the planet economy of the telcos. And then now the telcos try to restore possibly a control all of the communications, including the internet, and through alliance with ITU. So I'm brutal about that. But then we are grateful of the Internet Society that started a process of explaining, letting to understand, letting to verify which are the real problems. And so in this way, we should focus single critical points and try to make alliance with those that will participate in the discussion and preparation of Baku. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefano. Bertrand?
Bertrand Lachapelle, again, not as a member of the board. I have a tradition of trying to bridge a relationship between actors who love not to talk to one another and to stay in their silos. I've been lambasted enough by the Secretariat of the ITU for supporting and defending ICANN when I was at the plenipotentiary as a French representative to be able here to try to insert one modicum of defense of, obviously, the ITU not taking the floor to explain what they're doing and why they're doing it. I think we are in a multiple danger. One is not paying attention enough to this process, which is extremely important and can go very wrong. The other one is to frame it in such a black and white manner that we are actually potentially harming the debate that we want to trigger. And it's not something that people on this panel have made. That's not the point I'm making here. What I say is, if the environment and articles in Vanity Fair and so on begin to paint the debate for the coming years in terms of a latent new Cold War, we will get a self-fulfilling prophecy, and we will end up having one side with a bunch of countries that will be running their connected internets through a UN organization, while on the other side, a certain number of other countries will run their unified Roman internet under the OECD, Council of Europe, and so on. It is not absolutely stupid or unacceptable that the ITU that has already changed from telegraph to telephony needs to remain relevant by adapting to the next generation. The question is, where is the scope of the mandate the most appropriate and the most benefit? There are tremendous things that have to be done and that ITU has actually done in many cases regarding enhancing connectivity, addressing the question of why internet exchange points are not connected in Africa sometimes because the operators are not activating them. This is a tremendous field of activity where they have done good work. I want just to make sure that when we debate this space,
in order to avoid the kind of situation that Zahid was mentioning, where wrong arguments are being made, that people are on all sides, and if there's anybody from ITU here, as there was somebody yesterday, I would encourage them to speak up as we should speak up in their space and be allowed to speak up. And in this space, I welcome the fact that the documents may become a little bit more open.
Thank you, Bertrand. Can I ask you, the queue is now closed with Nigel, who's actually sitting down behind Nick. We are going to finish this on time, so please, very brief, if you wouldn't mind. Thank you. Bill.
Okay. Bill Smith, PayPal. I want to follow Bertrand's comments. I agree the ITU is a very useful organization. I respect them. I participate there. And, you know, we need to continue to engage and reach out with them and find their, let's say, proper place in this ecosystem. I will say, however, that a split internet, so a bifurcated internet, may in fact not be the worst alternative to what might come out of Wicket. A balkanized, a truly balkanized internet would be. And I suggest and submit that the internet community and like-minded member states may need to consider that this is in fact what we will end up with. And that if that is the alternative that we are forced to take, we should be prepared.
Yeah.
Okay? That is not my preferred outcome by any stretch of the imagination. I should point out that there are a couple of new, or is a new definition, or a couple of new definitions were proposed this past week in Geneva, and that is, instead of just having the definition of telecommunications, it was proposed that there be a new definition. And that new definition would be telecommunications/ICT. You might think this is sleight of hand, because the new definition, telecommunications/ICT, contains just one new word, processing. But it allows this new definition, new term and definition, to be slid in without modifying the definition telecommunications in the Constitution, which would not be allowed. Let's see. If people don't know it, there is not an organization. There's a website, wicketleaks.org, which you can go to and get documents. That's all I will say. And as the ITU informed us last week, I can neither confirm nor deny either the authenticity or accuracy of said documents.
The existence of the website.
Or the existence of the website, but I commend your attention to it. The ITU is paying attention. That was evidenced by Hamadan Toure's speech to the working group, chastising us for basically the creation of WikiLeaks, though to my knowledge no one in the room had anything to do with it. The other thing I would suggest is that I can carry maintain a fairly low profile with regard to the ITU, as it has done for some time now. I think that is very good, and I can assure you that others will carry the water for ICANN and this process.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Tarek.
Thank you, Chris. Tarek Kamel from Egypt. Following up the discussion that is going on these days about the WCIT, very briefly, I think we have a homework to do as an international ISTAR community, if I may call it, ISOC, ICANN, and IGF, and others. Definitely, we need to be more in leadership within the process that happens as far as we could. And we should do three things, in my opinion. First of all, awareness and education for the regulators and governments, specifically in the developing countries, that the existing model of ITRs and telecommunication will not work with the internet. Why? Because there have been 20 years now of investment already in infrastructure deployment all over the year that we cannot just take backwards or set backwards. So this old model, whether good or bad, will not work. We need to think about another model while we are working within the ITRs. The second thing, we need to promote what we are doing, the multi-stakeholderism that exists within the ISTAR organization. This message is not still getting through to the various administrations and governments worldwide, whether they are regulators or representatives from technology ministers or representatives from foreign affairs ministers in many cases, not technology ministries but foreign affairs ministers.
Yep.
And the third message that needs to go through, and we need to think about, we cannot just ignore the discussion that happens at the time being at the ITR and tell them just stay passive, do nothing. This will not work. We need to help them really in issues that are also of interest to the rest of the world and the developing countries. Just an example, broadband penetration needs to be enhanced. how can this be included in within the scope of the ITR and the WCIT, and how can, again, the ISTAR organizations help in that? Awareness about multilingual content and multilingual issues when it comes to local content and multilingual content, and what's the definition of local content, whether it's geographical proximity or what types of proximity. Definitely there are challenges of security issues, not security management of the infrastructure, but when it comes to utilization that we cannot ignore and needs legal discussions worldwide. So we need definitely to lead them and help them bring the right issues and challenging issues that needs global attention to be working together. And again, ICANN and the ISTAR organization can play a wonderful role in that, in awareness and education. Thank you.
Thank you, Tarek. Beher?
Two questions from remote participants. One by George Amadeo, and it's for Kathy. He's asking about the URL for the website you were referring to. I presume this is related to your when you listed the documents on the ITU, so he's asking about the website. The other question is from Faisal Hassan from ISOC Bangladesh. The question reads, politicians and governments and government officials in many developing countries like Bangladesh are not aware of the implications of WICCET. Traditionally, the governments have good communication with ITU and are not that much aware of ICANN. What is the role of ICANN in addressing this gap?
So we don't have time to answer the question properly, but it's a really good question. So we're going to take that. ICANN will take that, since I appear to be representing ICANN on the stage at the moment. ICANN will take that question, and we'll. Bahia, can you copy? Can you email me that, and I'll respond. Thank you, Nick.
Nick Thorne, one of the many in this room who has long experience of internet governance issues in the UN, going back to WSIS. I'd like to start by making one comment. I agree with Kieran. It doesn't happen very often, but I think there is a problem that while we are making progress in getting the message out among ourselves that we are facing a problem at WICCET, I'm not sure that we're actually getting the message much beyond our own community. So I've got three, I think, concrete suggestions. One, all of you in this room, all of us in this room, needs to remember that the WICCET, unlike WSIS, will be governments only. Representatives of governments will be sitting in a room in Dubai for 2 weeks dealing with each other. And so my suggestion, indeed, let me urge all of those in this room, is to ensure that your government representative is fully aware of your interests as they go into that room. And I'm sorry, but many representatives who traditionally go to ITU meetings are not aware of the interests of the internet community. Yes. Final thought, and a purely practical one, is, of course, one way of doing that influencing would be to get yourselves attached to your government delegation, because there will be a problem, and this became clear at one of the earlier meetings earlier in May when a senior member of the ITU was conducting worthwhile and open consultations, and I salute them for that, but it did become very clear that the likelihood of new ideas, probably in the form of amendments to some existing piece of paper, could come forward during the 2 weeks of the conference. And that is something which we need to guard against. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. And finally, Nigel.
Yes, thank you. Nigel Hicks and ICANN staff. I'm a member of the Global Partnerships team, so I'm just coming around the front because it's a bit easier because I'm not very good at standing backwards. First of all, a commercial. For those of you that enjoyed this session, did you enjoy this session? No, jolly good. Right, I like the enthusiasm. For those of you that enjoyed this session and actually want to look at some of the detail in TD 64, yes, we are going to go through 297 pages of TD 64 on Thursday morning. So come along Thursday morning. We've got a session on the wicket and the ITRs. We're not really going to go through the full documents, but we're going to have experts, including some of those on the stage, to go through the wicket in more detail. So if you've been tantalised by some of the information, particularly on the wicket, please come along Thursday morning, 9 o'clock. Secondly, let me just reassure you that ICANN is involved in the debate. We might not be a member of the ITU. We're certainly not a government. But we are involved in the debate, we're involved in the IGF, we're having a forum at the IGF and a workshop on GTLDs, we're involved in enhanced cooperation, and as someone mentioned earlier, there's a very critical discussion happening in New York in July when the ECOSOC committee is looking at the report from the CSTD on enhanced cooperation, and we'll be involved in that process. And of course, we're involved in the regional preparation phases for the wicket. The regional preparation phases, as someone said, is very important for the wicket. As as was said, there's lots of regional meetings going ahead before December, so please, the ICANN community, be involved in those. Thank you very much, Chris.
Are you ending with a song?
No.
You can take that. It's okay. Thank you, Nigel. Would you please, we're going to close the session now. There's an ASO session following and then new GTLD session following that. Could you please join me in thanking the panel? Well done, guys. Thank you.